Hi, my name is Kara Swiland. I am a freshman at Dillingham High School. I interviewed my Gumma June Ingram last fall. Some of these stories I've heard before, and some of them were new to me. I'm excited to share them with you. How did you meet my grandpa?
Well, I was 16 years old down at Clark's Point. When we finished eighth grade and went into the ninth grade, we all had to go to a Bureau of Indian Affairs school for high school. I was 14 when I left Clark's Point. And the village elders and the parents would make a homecoming dance for all the students coming home from high school. So they made a dance. I was the last one home. So they made a dance, and we always had an elder chaperone who watched everyone in the dance. And back then, in the mid-1960s, 1966, 1967, the people from Dillingham and Eacock and the Queen Fisheries would come to the dances. I don't know how they heard about it. And my best friend, Emily, and I were sitting there, we were both 16, sitting there in the dance, and in walked this guy, very, very handsome looking guy. And he came in with a friend. The friend's name was Billy Olson. And I asked my friend Emily, who's that guy? Is he from Bethel? And Emily said, no. He's one of the Ingrams. They're real tough. And I said, oh, okay, and I forgot about it. Then somebody tapped me on the shoulder, and he asked me to dance. So I danced with him. And then he walked me home after the dance, and it was the whole village raised a child then. And the next morning, two elders walked and knocked on my mom's door. And I stayed in the other room, and I listened to what they had to say. They told my mom that one of the Ingram boys had walked me home. And so they finished up visiting, and they left. When they left, my mom called the family meeting. And my brother-in-law at that time, because my dad had passed away a few years ago, he took the place of my father. And they said, you're only 16, he's out of high school, you can't go with him anymore. Back then, we listened to our parents. So I said, okay. And then I went on with life. And I graduated from high school when I was 18. And then I met Jim again when I was 19. The spark was still there. So we got married the following year, when I was 20 years old.
That's a good story. What are some stories growing up in Clark's Point?
Growing up in Clark's Point. I grew up in the 1950s and up until the 1960s in Clark's Point. Remember, we had to leave when we turned 14 to go away to high school because there was no high schools around. There was no such thing as a boarding student program where they stayed with families at the nearest high school. So we were sent away to either Chemawa Indian School, Mount Edgecombe High School, or Chilocco, Oklahoma, which was all Bureau of Indian Affairs schools. In Clark's Point, most everybody was related. Everyone kept an eye on the kids. If they saw us doing something, they reprimanded us to straighten up. Once a month, the elders and the parents would have a gathering with all the young people in the village, and they would tell us how to be. It would be from how important education was, how important honesty was, how important belief in a higher power was. And it was a good upbringing. We did not have electricity. We did not have running water. Us in Clark's Point. So we carried our water from the community well. We made homemade ice cream from the Crank ice cream. And we had movies once a week in the school. And of course, there was Christmas programs with different churches in the school. And that was when there was a school down at Eacock. So the people from Eacock would come up to Clark's Point and we would celebrate together.
What was your family like?
What was my family like? My maiden name was Anderson. My parents were Peggy Anderson. My dad's name was John R. Anderson. My parents had 10 girls and 3 boys. They raised 10 girls and 3 boys. How we lived back then was the traditional way of life. After a fishing season, my dad and my mom set netted. That was when set netting was strictly for women. The boys went off the set net site out to fish on a boat with the father when they were 12 or 13, sometimes even younger. How they got the food, there was no such thing as food stamps. There was no public assistance. How they did it, looking back, is they bought a grub stake. The last barge coming up, they would get enough cases of food to last the winter. And during the winter, my dad trapped beaver and he hunted, and there was no snow machines back then, so every household down at Clark's Point had a dog team in the back of their house. And on Saturdays, usually my mom would put up 1,000 fish, dry fish, just dried, plain old dried fish, and that's what we'd feed the dogs once a day. We'd throw them a fish. But on Saturdays, my dad had a pit outside, and he would, in a big half drum, he would mix a concoction of oatmeal and everything to feed the dogs at least one meal, a hot meal on Saturday. Our main goal in life and how we were taught down at Clark's Point was to do our schoolwork at the best possibly that we could do. So when my mom married my dad, she had only gone up to the third grade and didn't even complete third grade. I could only speak for myself. After supper, after the dishes were done, everything was settled down, those of us who were in school sat around the kitchen table to do our homework. Those younger ones were put in the living room with our parents. But my mom would come out and she would go around the table. And looking back, I watched her learn from first grade, second grade, because there were so many kids, there was a child in every grade. And I believe that she had gone through the eighth grade through us, her children.
What are some stories from Beaver Roundup in the past?
Well, I didn't come to Dillingham. My dad used to drive us up once a year in his fish boat in the fall time after fishing to visit my grandpa. His name was Billy Anderson. He lived down at Squaw Creek. He would drive us up and he would go into Squaw Creek and he would park right below my grandpa's house. I don't remember going into town. We always stayed at my grandpa's. My parents went to town. They shopped what they needed to shop for, I'm supposing, but we always stayed. I don't remember coming to Dillingham until I was 13. Because remember, we had limited income. The money that my parents had to last through the winter. They ordered us clothing from Alden's catalog, Sears Roebuck catalog, Montgomery Ward, and Spiegel. I don't remember a JCPenney or a Nordstrom. But I remember them ordering us clothing for the winter, and the clothes had to last us through the year. I was 13 when I first came to the Beaver Roundup in Dillingham, and good grief, it was so exciting. There was dog team races. There was a carnival. There was a movie theater called Lowe's Movie Theater here in Dillingham. They had a place called a big, long restaurant across from where NNN is now. It was called the Green Front. And it was so cool. And they had a store called Hildebrand's. It was a variety of things in that store. Coming from Clark's Point with one cannery store, it was like going to a big city. There was another store called Fisherman's Co-op, and that one was my favorite store because he was always old to me. His name was Dave Carlson. But that was the most interesting store I had ever gone through in my life. It had everything.
What are some stories of the best fishing year you've had and the worst fishing year you've had?
Oh my God. Going back, we had always fished, us girls, on the beach with my mom. And as I had said, the set netting was for women. So we always fished on the beach. Our fish camp was down at Ecock. My grandpa had staked that site. Billy Anderson, who was from Denmark, he wasn't from around here. He had staked that site in the late 1940s, and it's still in the family, and hopefully it'll stay that way. The worst fishing season we ever had was when people used to strike. I must have been about 12 years old, but my ears were always open and listening. The worst fishing season we had was when there was a strike. I believe it was in the early 1960s. I can't really remember exactly when. But because we couldn't even put out a subsistence net, we had pretty much nothing to eat. So what we would do, my mom would cook rice, and we'd have it with milk and sugar. So that was when the canneries pretty much were the foundation of the fishing communities. So my mom had, with all these kids, put on her special coat, and she walked up to Jim Eckern, who was a superintendent at that time, and she came back. That was when the cannery trucks used to deliver us water and deliver our groceries. She must have gone on credit because she came down with me like 5 or 6 boxes of food, and we were so happy. And that was the worst fishing season. The second worst fishing season was like 10 years ago, down at Ecock. There was a guy named Jeremy. We fished, and there was good fishing. We fished real hard and worked real hard. Come to find out, the last delivery, the fish were rotting in the back of the cannery, in the boxes. One of our friends came down with her camera and showed us the picture of these rotting fish. So we said we quit. We pulled in all our equipment, closed camp and came home, and we never got one red penny.
What's the best fishing year you've ever had?
The best fishing year was these past 2 years, man. 2017 and 2018. Those were the two best fishing seasons.
What was the scariest fishing experience you've had?
Oh, God, I have lots. Lots. But the worst experience we had ever had was waking up with Richie O'Connor knocking on our door and saying, "Your net's on the beach." Completely strewn on the beach. That's when a boat would run across our net and it would cut the rope. And so what we'd have to do, we'd have to go out, back out, if the tide is low enough, if it's a minus tide, we'd have to run the rope back through the block. So, yeah, those many times that happened. So there's always that danger on stationary set nets, because understandably, the fishermen get tired. And they fish and they lack of sleep, make their judgment kind of bum. And sometimes they come too close to our buoys and cut their prop, cut our buoy line. That's not bad, though.
What are some stories about great-grandma?
I have lots of stories about my mom. She was quite a woman. She could take something and make food. She could take a little bit of food and make it into a feast. She never, when a person came to her house, they were served tea and the best food she had in her refrigerator. That's a legacy she left to us. To always share our food and to be kind to especially those people who are looked down upon. She put into our way of growing up that we are placed on this earth to lift others up, not to tear them down, but to lift each other. To lift others up. And her favorite words were love, 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 forgive, forgive, forgive. Those were the things that we're trying to pass on to our children and our grandchildren in her memory.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.